Welcome back in to David L. Gray Show, Off Code and Unscripted. We are streaming live here at St. the David L. Gray Show, Off Code, Unscripted on St. Dominic's Media. It's about 10 p.m. here in Germany, and we're streaming live on Facebook, YouTube, X.com, and we have the audio version. However you get your iTunes, your list of iTunes, however you get your, you know, Spotify, we're everywhere. Anywhere you get your audio version of the show, wherever you get your podcast, we are there. But if you're listening to us on iTunes, make sure you leave us that 5-star review. It definitely helped the algorithm. Make sure if you're watching the audio version, make sure you hit that like button. It definitely helps us with the algorithm. But however you're listening, wherever you're listening from, just glad to have you here for this awesome show. Now, I'm working overtime for you guys. I don't just have one thing for you today. No, I don't just have one thing for today. I don't just have two things for today. No, not two. I had three things for you today in me Jamaican voice. I got three things for you today. Right? You know, you want to be a Lowry, you want to be a Rasta boy, eh? You got to listen to the three things I have for you today. It's going to be an awesome show, man. Me has an awesome show for you today. I got three things I got to tell you. And they, it's going to be the fantastic, man. It's going to be Adi. Make you a Rasta boy. So come on, let's get into it now. Man, I gotta warm up into this show, man. I feel like I'm like bumbling around a little bit. I think I am because I just woke up. I had to take a nap. Got really beat up today at the masseuse lady, man. I got beat up really bad, and she told me that the next day you're gonna. She says tomorrow you're gonna feel really sore. Drink lots of water. But I feel it now. I just feel like I get into like a street fight. And I lost. I feel just really beat up and exhausted. I'm like, I had to take a nap. Woke up 10 minutes ago to do this show. Now I'm bumbling around. Don't know what I'm saying, man. Don't know what me son, man. So I'm going to have to warm up into this. So let me bear with me, work with me. Make sure you hit that like button, even if you don't like me right now. And so let's start here. I got D things for you. Appreciate you. Awesome. Appreciate you. Thanks for tuning in. All right. So where do I want to start? All right. Let's start here.
Vince Cool and Yahoo Sports.
So the Celtics head coach. Joe Mazzulla. I think before or after game one with the Boston Celtics, they wanted to interview him, right? And in the interview, you know, the interviewer, he asked this like really like idiotic question, right? He wants to get into the social construct. Whoever invented these social constructs were idiots, races themselves. Like, whoever thought to call people their skin color? Whoever thought to call people their ethnicity, like that's who we are. Like that's the summation of who we are is, you know, something that we didn't even try to do. Something that's a complete, doesn't really matter. It doesn't impact our salvation. You know, when we die, we get to our judgment day. God's not going to ask us, how good of a black man were you? That's not even on the table. But this is how these people use this like race social construct, this imaginary thing. They think it's so important to them. They thought it was apparently important to the head coach here because he completely eats this person alive. Check out this question. I was just so happy to see this interview with Celtics head coach Joe Mazzulla.
Hey, Joe. Vince Gill with Yahoo Sports. For the first time since 1975, this is the NBA Finals where you have two black head coaches. Given the plight sometimes of black head coaches in the NBA, do you think this is a significant moment? Do you take pride in this? How do you view this, or do you not see it at all?
I wonder how many of those have been Christian coaches. David Aldridge?
And he just looks around like, I'll wait. Like Joe. And it's weird because this guy replaced a so-called black head coach. The coach that got fired because he was having sex with one of the owners or the CEO's wife. And so he replaced this guy. And the guy says, hey, Joe, what does it feel like to be, you know, does this have any sort of impact on you to be like a black head coach in the finals against another black head coach? and he says,
sometimes with black head coaches in the NBA, do you think this is a significant moment? Do you take pride in this? How do you view this, or do you not see it at all?
I wonder how many of those have been Christian coaches.
He looks around like, anybody? As soon as I saw this, man, you know what my thoughts were.
This is a masterpiece.
This is a masterpiece. This is just a lesson in how to treat people who ask you, like, dumb questions. I also thought of this one as well.
Theocosis, for us laymen, to explain that.
Because he's looking around like, what? This is just a dumb question. So happy to see that. Let's get into the next one. Man, you know, every now and then, I get these letters from people who used to be Freemasons. And it just makes it all worthwhile. It really does. It makes me appreciate the mission that God has me on, a mission that I wasn't interested in being a part of. I thought when I became a Catholic and I walked away from Freemasonry, I thought that was it. You know, I read, you know, what the church teaches that says you cannot be a Catholic and a Freemason. And I'm like, hey, this, okay. All Catholics believe what's in the catechism, right? All Catholics are obedient to what the church teaches, but no, that wasn't the case. That's not what I found. So for the past, what has it been? 12, 14 years now, I've been working to speak to Catholics who call themselves Freemasons or Freemasons who dare to call themselves Catholic as communicated from church. I've been writing, I've been doing books, essays, master classes, podcasts. I've been doing everything, speaking, trying to have conversations with these people, speaking in a language that I know they understand. And a few times a year, maybe four or five times a year, I'll get a email or I get a message on LinkedIn, a message on Facebook with people who are maybe still Freemasons trying to figure out how to get out, how to negotiate this thing. And it just makes me really feel, it makes me feel really good because I do struggle with the other side of this, about always having to correct Catholics who were never Freemasons, but maybe read a Wikipedia page, never read my book, and dare speak on Freemasonry and always do it. And it's always what they say, always has a lot of errors in it. And it ends up undermining our case because when a Freemason is trying to leave Freemasonry and look into the Catholic Church and they hear Catholics say things that are wrong about Freemasonry, it makes them doubt everything else that we're saying. You know, they say, well, if that's not true, they must not, what else? What the other thing they're saying must not be true either. That, you know, can I be a Catholic and a Freemason? But man, so the other day I got this letter and I'm going to read it to you. It's made me feel so happy and it just like reinvigorated me to keep going a little bit longer. Check it out. So I blocked out some things that kind of like identifies the person. But he says, dear Mr. Gray, I hope you're doing well. On the last months, I've been facing a horrible dilemma and would be really happy if you could share your experience with me. I am a senior DMOLE, which is the Freemasons youth group for young men, and entered apprentice. So he's been a DMOLE, the youth group, for a while since he's a senior DMOLE, and he's also been initiated into the first degree. from the, he mentions his Grand Lodge here. I was raised as a Catholic and apostatized some years ago. By the time of my initiation, I was already suspecting Christianity was real. After studying a lot, I came to the conclusion that I should never have left the Holy Mother Church. For the last months, I have been making excuses to miss most of the meetings of my lodge. Last week, after doing Eucharistic adoration, I decided to never step a foot in a Masonic meeting again. Praise be to God. Today, I officially asked for my suspension, but this is temporary. I still need to make my definitive resignation. I was thinking about, taking some time, taking some months to make a deep examination of my conscience and for a lifelong confession. Catch the opportunity to complete my obligation as an adult leader in DeMolay and resign from the lodge. I'm determined to do it and won't step back. I can't lie. It'll be hard. I know, you say, these guys for years, and I'm profoundly involved, especially DeMolay. You know how it is. Even better than me. I really appreciate it if you could give me some suggestion, sincerely. Man, I really love that letter. I did. I love every time people send me letters about, you know, they've seen my work and they trust me and they reach out to me asking me, hey, how do I leave? What steps do I take? Hey, I just need some encouragement. This is hard. And so, and I sympathize with the young man. As I tell people, it is harder to, I would say, leave Freemasonry than it is to stop a porn addiction. Why is that? Because I think a porn addiction, yeah, I think it attaches to the body. It can build, the body can build up these habits. It's kind of like sugar. You know, the body can crave sugar and the body can sort of trick the mind and say, hey, we need sugar. And so pornography can have that same effect on the body. It can also have that outward effect of affecting you, how you, I would say, treat women, you know, because you've gotten used to objectifying them. So it can have that effect. But man, leaving Freemasonry is even more difficult than that. And people know how difficult porn addictions are for men and women. But with Freemasonry just not, it attaches to things that are even much more deeper than that. It attaches to a man's self-esteem because Freemasonry makes you feel important. It makes you feel valued. It gives you these like crazy titles, right? Also, so it attaches to your self-esteem, attaches to your worth, attaches to your value. But one of the things that it does, and I think Freemasonry does this better than anyone else, and Pope Pius the 13th, he wrote about this in Humana Genus. He had wrote about how Freemasonry incorporates the whole family. It's not just a Freemason, it's the Masonic family. It's his wife, it's his kids. Everyone's going to join in. Freemasons, especially at that time, they did a really good job bringing youth in. And so this is what this guy is experiencing. Now your family's involved, and also you start making friendships. The lodge is where your friends are at. These are your brothers. This is your fraternity. This is who you spend a lot of time with. This is who you eat dinner with. So it becomes a whole thing. So that's why it's very hard for a lot of men, even women who are Eastern Stars, to step away from Freemasonry. That's where their friends are. This is the people they love. This is their life. And so this is what he's experiencing. And it's I completely understand how it's really hard, but I definitely encourage any man, particular a man that's a Catholic and who's being disobedient to what the church teaches by being a Freemason, that let's go back to the judgment piece again. Like I said in the first segment, God is not going to judge you by your ethnicity, your social construct. God is going to judge you by one thing, what you did and what you failed to do. Were you obedient or not? Right. So it's important that you be obedient to what the church teaches. So this, I wrote back to the young man, and I gave him just a word of encouragement. I shared the same word of encouragement with everyone else who is experiencing this same thing. I said, blessings and peace. What I found is that whenever I follow the truth, I gain everything and lose nothing that matters. We lose many things when we leave lies behind. But I am not convinced that those things are greater than the truth. I still have friends I made when I was a Freemason. And we still love each other because our bond was deeper than lies. And our love for each other was based on the truth of who God created us to be for one another. So God will use that time he allowed you to have in the Demo Land Freemasonry for something greater. You should trust and believe in that. Be patient with yourself, but remain steady on the path of truth. Again, you have nothing to lose and everything to gain. I'm proud of you and will pray for you. I hope my encouragement and prayers aid you in the journey back home. We need you and God needs you here. So that was my word of encouragement. And man, can't wait to hear back from him again and hear how his journey is again. But yeah, I definitely share a word of encouragement to everyone who's on that same path as him. So let's get into the next one now. All right, so give me a moment to set this whole thing up. Okay, I was like, DLG is warmed up now. I'm getting there. Make sure you guys check out Kyle Copey. Man, he's putting together some serious work here at St. Dominic's Media, putting together one excellent show after another. Make sure you get over there, give him some likes so the algorithm can appreciate him like I do. So, man, let me build this one up for you, right? Because this plays into the theme of what I've been talking about today. Obedience. I think that, you know, you hear me say this. I've said this before about, Rad Trad Inc. I say even sometimes people who sort of misunderstand the purpose of liturgy. And I hear this from a lot of people. They make a big emphasis on in a very important aspect of liturgy, which is the memorial sacrifice, right? Jesus saying, do this memorial me. And in the traditional Latin Mass, just the beauty and the clear emphasis, the clear messaging that this is a sacrifice. People would say that it looks like a sacrifice. It feels like a sacrifice, right? This is the subjective perception that they will have. And I might agree with them in a sense. It depends what I'm comparing it to. But they say this looks like a sacrifice. And so that's the emphasis they would make there. But you know, one thing that I've been saying for years is same thing that Samuel said in 15:22. And Samuel said, has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to listen than to the fats of rams. So here in 1 Samuel 15:22 is a teaching we find throughout scripture that obedience is greater than sacrifice. This is something that Jesus Christ himself teaches. because he sacrifices himself on the cross because he's obedient. It's not the opposite. He's not obedient because he sacrifices himself, rather because he sacrifices himself because he's obedient. Obedience is greater than sacrifice. But we see something that's very troubling to me in Catholicism today. And it's not just the radical traditional ink, those people who are really just turn us all into Protestants, and we'll get into that. Dr. Peter Kwasniewski's later, his latest effort, you know, to make some Protestants out of us. But it's something that I even see on, the radical liberal left, right? I see the James Martin types. I see it with them as well. We just have a problem with obedience. And I used to think maybe it's just American, our independent spirit, or just the Protestant nature of, you know, of just the ethos of this country, you know, to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. It's just independent Protestant spirit that we're just all imbibed with. Maybe that's why we see it in the United States more than other places. But ultimately, it's really just the demonic spirit that we see go all the way back to Genesis. This questioning spirit from the serpent, like, that says, did God really say that? Did God really say that? Right? In that question, in that delighting in the false desire really pushes on that spirit of disobedience. And it's something that we really have to consider and do something with, especially in this Catholic social media space. I'm going to go over some examples as I set this whole thing up for you. And then I'm going to deal with Dr. Peter K. All right. So let me set it up this way. Where should I start? Let me start. Let me start here. You know, there's an issue that we have, I think platforming disobedience. I think if you are anyone on social media or any radio show, that you should not be platforming people who are disobedient to the church, who are setting themselves up as their own magisterium. But I think that's something that we see time and time again. Right? Here's one example. I think probably one of the most obvious ones. You know, you see it here in Credo, all right? Bishop Athanasius Snyder, you know, he is a darling of people, right? I've seen there's one site now that, you know, they're using this book to teach children in like one of their online courses. I mean, using Credo to teach children the faith. And the book Credo by Bishop Athanasius Snyder is nothing less than just a handbook in how to become a Protestant, how to become disobedient, how to reject what the church teaches in favor of your own magisterium. And just a quick example here. I mean, there's many heresies in the book Credo. many heresies. Here's just one of them. In chapter 15, 5114, he says, dealing with the death penalty, he says, when does society have the right to inflict the death penalty? Bishop Anthony Snyder, in his catechism, he says that the lawfully constituted public authority may put proven criminals to death for the most serious crimes when this is necessary. Then he goes into a list of ends. And, you know, as Catholics, we do not believe that the ends justify the means. We look at the means itself, the moral act itself. Is it murder wrong or not wrong? Right? It's the moral act. We don't get to the ends and say, well, if the ends are this, you know, like abortion, well, if the ends free the woman and she's able to pursue a career, if it, you know, if it saves a child from some sort of poor life, then yeah, abortion is fine. We don't look at the ends. We look at the means itself. And so, but he points out a few ends, you know, to maintain social order and repairing injustice, protecting the innocent, deterring future crime, as if science has ever proved that's true, and summoning a criminal to true repentance. Right? So that's what he teaches in his catechism. And this is what we're teaching children, to be Protestants, to disobey what the church teaches, to obey some sort of other magisterium. Like Paul said, people who teaching another Jesus Christ. Because what the church teaches is clear in paragraph 2667. And consequently, the church teaches in the light of the gospel, the death penalty is inadmissible because it is an attack on the inviolable dignity and of the person. And she works with determination to abolish it worldwide. So, you know, a person can say, well, I disagree with that. I think that has a problem with obedience. I don't think you want to get to heaven saying, well, I was smarter than the church. But I can understand how people could say, I don't understand it, right? But I do accept it because that's what the church teaches, and it's not harmful for me to believe that. I can see that. But to produce a book, your own catechism, that's contrary to what the church teaches, that's Protestantism. It's Protestantism. And this is just one of many heresies that's in Bishop Athanasius Snyder's book. Just one of many. We also tend to platform people who are living a life of disobedience. And I platform this priest, this Theodore Murr as well, before I knew that he was living a life of disobedience. And I repent of that, because I should not be putting people in front of you who are being disobedient to the church, because what message does that send? Again, this is more Protestantism. And it's spreading Protestantism. This spirit that's present in the church today, that, oh, you can be disobedient. You can set up your own magisterium. This is just Protestantism. But by me putting someone in front of you, who is probably a wonderful man, I enjoyed the interview. As I always told people, my interview with Father Murr was one of my favorite interviews. It was. I thought it was wonderful. He has a great vocation story, right? But it's not something that you see in my public files anymore, still in the members only, because I don't think I should be promoting disobedience. How is Father Murr disobedient? Well, this letter that was published in a public document for public consumption is a diocesan memorandum from 2011, on page 32, out of the Diocese of Cleveland, Ohio. In their section where they talk about news from the USCCB, and letters that they received from other places. It says, warning from the USCCB. Joseph J. Gafaso, Father Donald R. Kaczynski, Father Alu, Father Alessandro Solon Vadetti, and Father Charles T. Murr. When it gets to now, the other gentleman that were listed in here, the Cafalso person, he was just a swindler from claiming to be from Haiti, and he's raising money. The other people were really suffering from the same fate that Father Charles Murray is. That's they had been absent from their diocese for some time, unexcused. I think Father Murr, I think his case was unique in that he is also, he had been, his faculties had also been removed, but all these people were suffering from going AWOL, right? I didn't know a priest could not go. This is something I had learned when I read this. Like, I didn't know a priest gets in trouble by going AWOL. Okay. But then it continues. Father Murr has been informed again. Father Charles T. Murr, Archdiocese of New York, has advised the conference that Father Charles Theodore Murr, priest of the Archdiocese, who had his faculties removed in 2006 as a result of his unlawful absence from the Archdiocese, is now residing in Archdiocese of San Francisco, where he's presenting himself as a priest. Father Murr has been affirmed again that he is prohibited from exercising any priestly functions, from wearing clerical garb, and from presenting himself as a priest in good standing. Both the Archdiocese of San Francisco and the Bishop of Oakland have been informed of Father Murr's status. If further information is needed, should contact be made with the Archdiocese, and there is the phone number. And so I've sent this letter as well to some people in Catholic social media who platform Father Murr. All right. And saying, hey, I think it's irresponsible to be platforming someone who is living a life of disobedience, who they've been told by their diocese that they should not be presenting themselves as a priest, but they are. Father Murr could have reasons that he thinks is just. His absence may be validated in his head. In fact, I know they are, because as human beings, that's what we do. We cannot do anything that we have not convinced ourselves is a good thing, because we're created by God as good. And our heart yearns for good. But oftentimes it's the subjective good. But everything that we do, even if it's like objectively evil, we have to convince ourselves that it's good. This is how we operate. So I know that what he thinks he's doing is a good thing. But the fact of the matter is that he is living a life of disobedience. And I just don't believe that's something that we should be platforming, right? So, because again, all the thing this does is when we promote disobedience, we promote people setting up their own magisteriums. The only thing this does is create a spirit of disobedience in the church. That's all it does. It spreads Protestantism. And I would say the same thing about, Kennedy Hall as well. This is someone who a lot of people platform, But he's also a person who clearly and openly says that going to the Catholic Mass is the Novus Ordo Mass is a near occasion of sin. Right. And I'll play this clip for you. Let me bring it up here so I can. You can see what I'm saying here.
And, you know, the dogmatic box he speaks of, how did you take that?
Well, of course. I mean, traditionalists are the problem, right? I mean, you and I, prayer, rosary, we believe in the catechism of the Council of Trent. We think.
We believe in the catechism of the Council of Trent. People like us, Joe, we believe in a catechism of the Council of Trent. This is who we're platforming. Again, these people who believe in a credo of Bishop Athanasius Snyder, people who believe in the Catechism of Trent, which is ironic because if you read credo in the heresies of Bishop Snyder, he even contradicts Trent when it comes to the ontological nature of the human condition. So, but I think if you're really living in that world, right, you're living in that echo chamber. As I said, oftentimes, you know, the liberals do this as well, but the rad trads do it just as much, that they reference each other. They invite each other on their shows. You know, they're their own magisterium. And so if you're living in that space, and you hear a person says, you know, yeah, we follow the Catechism of Trent, that's always code for we reject Vatican II. But if you're living in a world, you don't hear that, right? Because this is just how people speak, right? This is just the culture. This is just the ethos, right? This is the groupthink. Yeah, we follow the Catechism of Trent. That's code for we reject Vatican II.
I think there was a Catholic Church before 1965.
We believe that there's a Catholic Church before 1965.
Clearly, we're the problem because since 1965, everything's been hunky dory and all sunshine and roses. So, I mean, this is just par for the course. It's a Marxist ploy to label the people who have values and have standards and virtue as being your enemy because. You know, they have to destabilize and demoralize so they can bring forth their agenda.
Bring forth their agenda. And it's funny that, you know, these people call that Marxism. When the only thing we hear from them is the Marxist ideology, this victim mentality, this grievance mentality. Oh, we've been aggrieved. We have an enemy we have to fight against. We're the victims. We have a foot on our neck. That's Marxism 101. Anytime you can set up a people and say, oh, you're aggrieved, you're a victim, you need us to save you with our liturgy. That's just basic. That's just Marxism 101. Right? But what it is Protestantism. It's setting up your own magisterium. It's creating your own pope. Our church, we follow the Catechism of Trent. We follow whatever was going on before 1965. That's not where you want to be. You don't want to be a Protestant. You don't want to go to hell. You don't want to get to your judgment day and tell God that you leaned on your own understanding. It is a far better proposition to on judgment day say, I followed, or at least I believe faithfully, everything that a Catholic Church taught because it is your church, Jesus Christ. And so therefore, if I erred, if somehow if I failed, that's not on me. That's on you, God, because I followed everything that your church teaches. It's a weird proposition that people would like to get a judgment day, and then they would not like to just leave matters in God's hands. They would like actually just grab something and claim it as their own, saying, I did this, God. I did this for you. I just don't think that works out well on Judgment Day. I think it works better on Judgment Day if you make God accountable for what he told you to do. Because if you do everything that he told you to do, if you believe the church he established, that he's responsible for, so what? There's a bad pope. God's responsible for that. Yes, we did it. We elected it, but it's his church. He could fix anything. He could come in with a whip right now and whip everything out of there. So it's his church that he's responsible for. So it's a weird proposition that people would want to take accountability for something that's God's business and just lose patience with God. God, you're not acting fast enough. You're not cleaning this thing up fast enough. And they want to grab it. I'm just going to follow the Catechism of Trent. I'm going to do everything before 1965. I think some of that isn't harmful at all. But then there's scales of this whole thing where it becomes a setting up your own magisterium and becoming Protestant. We have Protestants in the Catholic Church. Finally, let me get to Dr. Peter K. I hope you've been following me along. I hope I set this whole thing up very well for you. Now, we started with the young man who's leaving Freemasonry saying, he says, I choose obedience to Christ and his church, and I'm sorry. We have to work a little bit on him, this idea he has that he's going to go back and bury his dead. Remember in his letter, he says, oh, well, I just want to finish up my duties as a demolé. I completely get it. Right? Sometimes we do want to go back and bury the dead. But what does Jesus say? Let the dead bury their dead, right? So in his case, now we're saying, let the demolé handle the demolé. It's not going to fall apart when you leave. Choose obedience to Christ and his church. That's going to work out well for you on Judgment Day. And then second, we saw the Credo by Bishop Athanasius Snyder, a book that's spreading Protestantism, that's teaching people how to be Protestants. A person who has set up his own magisterium and saying, this is what the Catholic Church teaches in the Catechism. I'm going to teach opposite of that. That's disobedience. That's not how you become a saint. That's how you go to hell. The spirit of disobedience that's permeating throughout the radical traditional ink space. And, you know, I could beat up the red tread ink all day, but I can also say the same thing about the far left. They do all this stuff in a different way. And I've talked about that then, and I'll talk about it in the future, right? Then we went to Father Charles Murr, who has had his faculties removed, who has been told by his diocese not to present himself as a priest. But on some of these platforms, he's being platformed. He's been put out in front of us as a legitimate priest. But he's just a man wearing a costume at this point. He's wearing priest face. It's like a transgender. It's not real. Sorry, he has an indelible mark in his soul. A priest forever under order of Melchizedek. But he's wearing priest face at this time. It's really not a whole lot different than Father Hellnaw, my fictional character. He wears Clara's garb as well. Presents himself as a priest. But it's fiction. It's a skit. disobedience is what Father Charles Murray is doing. But this is what we're putting out there for you. Hey, listen to this guy. He's speaking the truth. Obedience is a higher good than sacrifice. And the reason why we know obedience is a higher good than sacrifice, you know, obedience just flows from love. If you love someone, in particular God, you're obedient. And out of that obedience, other things are going to flow, such as sacrifice, right? We keep missing the lex viendi, right? We want to focus on the lex orandi, the law of prayer. We want to focus on the law of credendi, the law of belief. But we keep missing, I think, which is what I love about Dominican spirituality, is just you got to live that thing out, man. You got to go be in the world who you have received through the liturgy. You just that's what it's all about. We're not completely autonomous in the liturgy. That's not you standing. That's not you sitting. That's not you kneeling. The church is telling you to do that. That's not you chanting. That's not you participating, right? You know, Vatican II wanted to get us more involved to participate. They thought if we were to participate in the liturgy, then we would like take that participation out of the mass. I don't think that's worked out too well, but I understand the idea of liturgical reform, making us participate, because the liturgy that we had was liturgy of that was a liturgy of many atrocities in the history of the world, from World War II, World War I, slavery. It was a liturgy of, yes, many saints, but a liturgy of many sinners. And so the thought, church thought we could do better. Let's create a liturgy that teaches us how to participate and be Christ in the world. I get the idea behind it. I do. Because the lex viendi is essential. You have to live it out in the world. You just have to. Because that's what you'll be judged by. What you do with your frontal lobe when you lead a mass. I don't care how well you sing and pray the Latin. God's not going to judge you by that. He's going to judge you by what happened after the priest said, et missa est, go, you are dismissed. What happened in between the masses? What did you do? What did you fail to do? We keep missing that. An essential piece of that is obedience. Obedience. And David makes a great point. You know, I talk about this often. You know, your participation is not you being a lector, a Eucharistic minister, or an usher. That's not. God hasn't called you to do any of that, if I want to be honest with you, right? God has called no one to be a Eucharistic minister. God has called no one to be a lector. God has called no one to be an altar server. All that stuff a priest is trained to do, is ordained to do, and he should be doing. Right? That's not the participation the church is teaching. That's not. This liturgy just wants to form you better than the traditional Latin rite did. Form you to be participants in the divine nature. And it was hoping that if you participated more in the divine nature during the liturgy, you would take that out of the mass. But too often we just go eat donuts. We go do the next thing. We go watch football. Right. That wasn't a point. But hopefully I set this whole thing up well about obedience. And so now we're going to deal with Dr. Peter Kay making Protestants out of people. And I think in his heart, he's become a Protestant as well, at least intellectually. Let's take a look at these clips. Give me one moment here.
corresponding to the obligation prescribed by the church, namely to assist at Mass on Sundays and certain holy days, there is a duty on the part of the church to provide a suitable Mass for the faithful, not a hootenanny or a blasphemy. So corresponding to your obligation is a duty on the part of those who provide the liturgy. Catholics have a magisterially defined right to worship according to the church's tradition and according to the rubrics of the liturgical books. You are right to be seeking a Mass that is totally free of abuses or heresy. Nor should you accept the sophistry that we are called to suffer with Christ when we attend a bad liturgy. If you know from experience and by a reasonable conjecture that a certain parish Mass is likely to be an occasion of abuse, sacrilege, or heresy, you should not attend it. In such a case, there is no need for a dispensation from anyone, since we are dealing with matters of divine and natural law. The laity, therefore, can never be at fault for not attending a liturgy that offends God and harms the people, especially children. This is a really important principle. It's not your fault. It's the fault of the ones who are doing the bad things.
Let's go over these one by one real quick. A liturgy that offends God. This is just basic SPX priest groupthink. This is just basic teaching that you find in the Society of St. Pius X. That the Novus Ordo Mass is a near occasion to sin. I have a longer video that I did about Kennedy Hall saying that as well. That's how I titled that video, Kennedy Hall Spits on Jesus Christ. And here, Dr. Peter Kay does the same thing. The Novus Ordo Mass is not a near occasion to sin. It does not offend God. For if it did, God would not come to it. He would not come as the Holy Eucharist to the Mass. He would not come into sin. Scripture says this, that the Holy Spirit will not contend with you forever, says in Genesis. And that the holy cannot dwell with the sinful. So God does not come to sin in this way. If we're to say, well, God comes to something that's sinful, that will, I mean, God himself is sin. That God himself is committing a sin by coming into a near occasion of sin. Rather, I think we could say the opposite about what God does, about the essence of the Mass, which is a person named Jesus Christ. This is the essence which the Catechism of the Catholic Church teaches, that the church is the guardian of, and that it's immutable because Christ is immutable. It doesn't change. No matter where the Mass is being held at, whether it's in a prison, whether it's in a war zone, it doesn't matter where the Mass comes, as long as it has the elements that are essential to it, which are namely, most importantly, the prayers of consecration. I find it completely disgusting that someone would say that the Mass is a near occasion to sin. I find that very offensive. I find it demonic. And every time I hear somebody say it, I just want to punch him in the neck. I do. I just want to punch you in the neck for talking about God like that, saying that God is sinful. But then he says that you can be a Protestant. You have the power yourself to determine whether you'll stay home or fulfill your Sunday obligation. That you have the power, you have the choice to choose to be disobedient to what the church teaches. Is that what God said? This is what a serpent says in the garden. Did God really say that? Did God really say you can't eat from the fruit of the tree in the center of the garden? This is how the demon speaks. He says, if you know from experience or from conjecture that the Mass will be a clown Mass. Excuse me, unless you have some sort of demonic power of being able to foretell the future or something like that, or even a good power, maybe a gift that God has given you. I don't know. Unless you know the future and you have seen in your clairvoyance that this mass tomorrow, there's going to be an invalid consecration or something like that. I don't know by experience or conjecture, because anything can happen. It could be a different priest. The bishop could be there. The priest can himself can have a conversion. You don't know what mass you're going to. You don't know what's going to happen. But I think we have a reasonable hope that the mass will be completely valid. And if it is not valid, well, we've done our obligation. We've done our duty. The rest of it is on God. So you see again how people want to snatch from God his job. This is Protestantism 101. This is a masterclass in Protestantism. You know how Protestants do. You don't have to go to church on Sunday. You can stay home in your bed. You can watch it on TV. There's still people doing it in the Catholic Church post-COVID. No, I'll just watch Mass on TV. Who gave you that power? Who gave you that authority? That's not what the church teaches. You don't get to decide whether you're going to be obedient or disobedient to God. That's not your choice. As a disciple of Christ, your call is to be holy, which means to be obedient, to love, to be obedient. And 30 says that it's not a grave sin for you to miss Mass because you've determined on your own, based upon your own authority. Based upon your own authority. That you don't have to go to Mass based upon your own authority and some sort of clairvoyance you had. This is demonic. And I call it a Protestantism, but this is demonic. Anyone who is out here teaching you to be disobedient to God, anyone who is out here teaching you to commit a grave sin needs to be put away. There should be no television show on EWTN, the Papal Posse. There should be no podcast. There should be no conference that invites this man there to speak. Because Satan is speaking through him. That's not God. God does not tell you to commit a grave sin because you can determine that on your own. You have that power. You have that right. So you have these people in the Catholic Church that have accumulated some fame because they tickled the ears of traditionalists. You know, we get to hear them say things that we agree with, like, oh, great, he's saying what I say, what I believe. These darlings who don't have theology degrees, who just philosophy degrees, and not, you know, nothing against philosophy, right? I never got good grades in it in grad school. Not a Steubenville. But I understand it. I know what's going on. But these people are not theologians. They're not moral theologians. They're not canon lawyers. But here they are, people like Dr. Peter Kay, people like Kennedy Hall, telling you to commit a grave sin. But that is not a grave sin. I mean, where did it get off? But no conference, radio show, podcast, TV show should be platforming people like this who are here telling Catholics to commit a grave sin. Like Amron said, yes, yeah, two sides of the king saying, these are all cafeteria Catholics. Whether they're on the so-called far left or far right, they're people just making up crap as they go along. It's just a grift to make money while they send you to hell. It's just a grift. It's not even real. Lisa says he comes off as a snob. I think it's great that the uneducated who don't know Latin can enter into prayer during the mass. Yeah, I do as well. Here's a second clip.
It would be difficult to maintain that occasional attendance at a Novus Ordo Mass celebrated in the most tradition-friendly manner possible would be spiritually harmful to oneself or one's children. Yet, as that opportunity is rarely available, it is a moot point for most people. Furthermore, after one has made the transition and adjustment to the classical Roman Rite, one grows accustomed to its traditional calendar of seasons, feasts, and fasts, its potent means of cultivating an array of virtues, and its highly consistent methods for enticing and rewarding actual participation. For a person thus habituated, the Novus Ordo, even in optimal conditions, brings with it distraction, irritation, anguish, a plethora of near occasions of sin. Ultimately, the two rites are different worlds with different world views. Participating means imbibing the spirit of the rite and consenting to its continuation. Building on what has been argued so far, I maintain, no one is obliged to attend a mass at which our Lord is treated irreverently, taking long-standing Catholic tradition as the measure of what counts as reverence, or at which one will be provoked to sin or to participate in the sins of others by complicity. Indeed, it is not good for one's own faith or for the faith of one's family even to witness such a liturgy, let alone take an active part in it. Therefore, to fulfill one's Sunday or holy day obligation properly, one ought to have, ahead of time, a reasonable certainty that the Mass one will be attending will not be defective in the aforementioned ways.
Theosis for us laymen, to explain that.
So once again, he says, do not attend the Novus Ordo Mass. He said a lot more things in there that we need to unpack. Because that was flatly demonic. Flatly demonic. Lisa says, he is so judgmental. I have been to various different rites. Who is he to judge the interior of another? And that's the perplexing thing, right? Because there's 33 different liturgical rites that are still in use today. This is far off from a few hundred years ago when it was well over 100, 200. You know, we're just down to 33 now. But there's always this false dichotomy between the Novus Ordo and the Latin, right? Let's unpack some of this because it is worthy of unpacking. First, he says that a reverent Novus Ordo is rare. You know, for a couple of years on this channel, we did a series called Mass Nightmares. It was during COVID and post-COVID. We kind of went around looking at some of the weird things people were doing. You know, it was some weird stuff, right? But, you know, to prepare for that show, I did lots of research, which means I watched a lot of videos. I think perhaps over the course of 2.5 years, I've been to every diocese. Went to every diocese online, found their churches. Because usually on a diocese website, they send you a link to the churches. I went to those churches, seeing if they had a YouTube channel, which is probably, let's say, a YouTube or Vimeo or a Facebook page. Let's say, I would say most dioceses, let's say there's maybe 70% of their churches have some sort of mass online. It's pretty high, especially back during the COVID times. So I didn't watch every video of every church, but I'll pull out a sampling, right? Maybe four or five from each diocese. I watched a lot of videos to prepare and to find stuff to show you guys as a teaching opportunity. So someone who watched a lot of masses online, for 2.5 years, you know, I had some repeats because I had to repeat. There were repeat offenders. Yeah, there's some bad masses out there. But frankly, from what I've seen in my research for 2.5 years, it didn't like something that was happening in every diocese. So I'm not quite sure where he says that it's rare to find a reverent Novus Ordo. That's the first lie. And also, this is just more Americanism. It's pretty myopic. It's somebody who doesn't use their passport. The world is much bigger than the United States. Has he been to liturgies in Costa Rica, the Philippines, Nigeria, Poland, China? I mean, where has he been to make this determination? But if you believe you live in the center of the world, I guess this is a fair perspective. There's nothing going on outside of the United States. His point about, you know, his emotional points, his emotional appeals, anguish, distress. Do people really feel these things when they're at Mass? If they go to the Novus Ordo, they're used to being at, if you're used to the trappings of the traditional Latin Mass. I get it. You know, if you're used to eating at places like Ruth Chris, restaurants that's attached to the Four Seasons Hotel, if you're used to eating at 5-star, 4-star Michelin restaurants, I get it how McDonald's can be a bad experience. And maybe even some anguish there. Maybe a little bit of distress, especially, you know, if the Oreo, you know, milkshake isn't available. I get it. But these are emotional things. I really never spoke to someone. I don't know that my empirical data really doesn't mean anything, but I've never met anyone that said going to the Novus Ordo is agonizing. It gives them anguish and stress. I could get how it could, perhaps. Again, if you're used to eating at a 5-star Michelin restaurant, for argument's sake, I would just give the traditional Latin Mass that. It's not my preference of the Mass. I would say the Divine Liturgy or the Byzantine Rite. That would be my 5-star Michelin. But when I was in St. Louis, when I was living there, I couldn't bear going to that Byzantine church they had there. I think I went 2 times. And the cantor was just horrible. Oh my gosh. I couldn't take it. As much as I love the Byzantine Rite. And when I was used to live in Columbus, Ohio, I was pretty close to just going over, becoming Byzantine. I was really close. And then we moved to St. Louis. And, you know, I said, maybe I'll continue here. Maybe I'll become Byzantine here. I couldn't. The cantor, it was just bad. Yeah, so maybe I can't understand agonizing, anguish, distress, perhaps. But that's not going to stop me from fulfilling my Sunday obligation. My emotions don't matter in regards to my salvation. They don't. The point he makes about the Novus Ordo right is not the Latin right. Yeah. Like Captain Obvious. The Novus Ordo is not the traditional Latin Mass. It's never going to be. Stop comparing them. These are two different liturgical rites. You don't have to keep trying to reconcile them. You don't. It's weird. And he says that the Lord is treated irreverently at a traditional Latin Mass. Now, he's treated irreverently at the traditional Latin Mass. I mean, at the Novus Ordo, he's treated irreverently. He says, where the Lord is treated irreverently. And he says the most demonic thing I think he says in this. He says not only just attending the Mass itself is a near occasion to sin, but he said just by going to, it makes you complicit in a sin. By going to the Novus Ordo Mass, it makes you complicit in a sin. And then he says that if you just witness the Mass, you're sinning. If you witness the Mass, you're sinning. It's just hard to believe that this type of demonic, the person can say this many demonic things in just one speech, just by witnessing the traditional Latin, but just by witnessing the Novus Ordo, you're sinning, let alone take part in it. But here's another thing that sort of passes as a type of intellectualism, fake intellectualism, that's really just a grift that we see from these people. That, again, they're just trying to make you Protestants. The only thing Dr. Peter K wants from you is to make you a Protestant. That's it. So, and this is why oftentimes people who go down this route, what they end up doing, what they end up becoming, you know, is either set of a conscience or Protestants. They go to Steve Skojak route, just lose their faith altogether. And so if you're platforming like Peter, platform people like Dr. Peter K, only thing you have to do is look into your comment box. Just go to your comments of your YouTube channel and see the comments. Well, just look how hateful and angry they are. The best way to grade your video, if you're a content creator, the best way to grade your content is to look in the comments. That's your grade. What are people saying about your guests? What are they saying about your content? That's your grade. And if people are in your comment box saying all types of things against Christ and his church, all types of anger and all types of emotions, that's what you put out there. That's what you fed. And people are just going to give back to you what you feed them. You feed them crap, they give you crap back. Your comment box is your grade. Here's the essay here from the New Liturgical Movement, which puts out a lot of good content. But here they say the omission that haunts the church is 1 Corinthians 11, 27-29. And what they're talking about is in 1 Corinthians, where Paul teaches, therefore, whoever eats this bread or drink the chalices of the Lord unworthily shall be guilty of the body and blood of the Lord. But let a man prove himself, and so let him eat of the bread and drink of the chalice. For he that eateth and drinketh unworthily eateth and drinketh judgment on himself, not discerning the body of the Lord. And so the author of this essay, his argument is that because the new missal, the new liturgical books, the new cycle readings that we have in Mass, because we do not hear this, because it does not include this part about eating and drinking unworthily, it does not include this verse from 11:27-29. Our calendar does have chapter 11 in it, but doesn't, you know, have these two verses, these three verses. He's saying that because that these verses about eating and drinking unworthily and not discerning the body and blood of the Lord, he's saying that omission haunts the church. And he goes on his essay to really blame that, the omission of this, on everything that's wrong in the church, why people do not believe in a real presence, why the Novus Ordo is like it is. Again, just the level of sophistry, and just the desperate grift. I would like that verse. I mean, I would like to see that verse in particular return to the readings, to be sure. I'll say that. But let me deal with the error of this essay. Number one, just because that verse is not mentioned, is not in the readings, does not mean that the priest cannot preach on it. Just a couple of weeks ago during Corpus Christi, the priest at our parish here at Ramstein Air Force Base, Holy Family Catholic Community, Father Yudemele, he preached on that, and it wasn't in the readings. Because in particular, because it was important for him to preach on it, because this was the time that our church community, he brought back both species as opportunities to receive for people. And so it was important for him to preach receiving worthily, going to confession. He had a whole homily on those verses. So just because they are not mentioned does not mean the priest cannot teach them. Second, because they are mentioned, if they were mentioned, does not mean that the priest will preach on them. Okay, they're in the readings. Does that mean that the priest will preach on them? No. Third, there's an assumption that people in the pews actually hear what they're being read, that they'll digest it. That just because something is read, how oftentimes have people, you've been at Mass or you've listened to your daily readings on your podcast from Laudate or something like that, and then you had to go back and listen a second time because you completely forgot what you just heard? That happens to me quite often during the week. I'll have my Laudate app up, I listen to it, and then I gotta go, so, oh man, what's that gospel reading? I have to go back again and listen to it. I'd be like, oh yeah, that's what it was. In that Mass, I think that's even more the case, maybe less the case, I don't know. But it could be the case that just because something is read doesn't mean you've digested it. The sophistry here. Fourth, just because it's not in the readings, let's not take the responsibility away from you as a Catholic to read the scriptures. But this guy in this whole essay, he's saying, oh, because those verses are omitted, That's the problem in the church today. Get out of here. Get out of here. But these are the type, this is a type of weaponizing. Weaponizing these things that they would consider to be deficiencies in the liturgy. They want to try to weaponize what they perceive to be deficiency against the church. They say, oh, because the Novus Ordo is deficient in this way as compared to this one rite right here. Not compared to the 32 other rites, but no, just compared to this rite right here, because it doesn't do what this one does, because it's unlike this one. Therefore, it's a near occasion of sin. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. The dumbest thing in my life. Like, who even compares these two liturgical rites? I don't compare the Novus Ordo rite with any of the 32 other, because it's its own thing. I don't think it's the most beautiful, but that's an emotion, right? that's just based upon personal experience. There may be some women who I think are more beautiful than this woman, but you probably don't agree with me. It's just based upon my experience, what I like. But weaponizing apparent deficiency or subjective deficiency is all these people do. That's their trick. They try to make you Protestant. They try to make you disobedient to what the church teaches. These people are not out for your good. And shame on anyone out here that's platforming any of these Protestants and claiming them to be Catholic. These are all Protestants. That's all they are. In their heart, they are Protestants. They become Protestants. They think they have their own magisterium. And they think they can use their magisterium to draw you away from Christ and his church so that you can follow them, so that you can feed their grift, so that you can pay them, so you can buy their books. This is all they want. They want power. They want esteem. But all they're going to get in the end is hell. Stop platforming these people. Stop listening to these people. The most valuable thing that you have in your life is time. And it's not even yours. The time that you were given has come from God. It's a gift. Use it rightly. Do not go around feeding yourself. Protestantism. I don't want you at a Protestant Bible study. I don't want you listening to the Protestants like Kennedy Hall and Murr and Kosinowski. I don't want you listening to them more than I want you at a Protestant Bible study. I don't want you reading Credo more than I want you reading listening to Joel Osteen. Joel Osteen, Credo, I don't know the difference. It's all the same trick bag. It's all disobedience. The more you feed yourself disobedience, the more disobedient you will become. But if you feed yourself virtue, if you pray to the Holy Spirit every day, throughout the day, ask the Holy Spirit, fill me with thy love and thy truth. Fill me with all your gifts and fruits according to God's will and purpose for my life. Pray that as often as you can. Come, Holy Spirit, fill me with thy love and thy truth and all your gifts and your fruits according to God's will and purpose for my life. Just pray that as often as you can. And you'll find your life just change. Just a simple prayer like that. Just the Holy Spirit who lives within you will come to life. And what you'll find is that lex viende, that being in the world who you received in the liturgy, Christ Jesus, you'll just begin to live it more in your daily life. And you'll find more peace. In a pursuit of peace, is at St. Dominic's Media, we say we pursue peace through truth. All right, so we pursue Christ through Christ. Christ is truth. Christ is peace. And both of these, so to pursue peace through truth, we arrive at Jesus Christ. So we preach the truth. This is the Dominican spirit. But we have within us, in our community, in our family, we have wolves. We have those who are not pursuing peace, but are pursuing war and are making war among us through these apparent deficiencies, by promoting disobedience. The same war that we saw going on in 1517 with the Protestants and Luther is the same thing that's going on now with Dr. Peter Kay, Kennedy Hall, Athanasius Snyder, and all these other guys. These are the new Luthers. These are the new people who are setting up their own magisterium. And as soon as you realize that, the better off you'll be. And that's all I know about that. So I hope I set that up well. I hope you got the point of this show today. And let me get to your comments before I get out of here. Let me get to some of my haters first. All right. You know, I try to be equal opportunity poster of comments. This guy, Michael Spire, he's writing a combination of text in caps in lowercase. David, you don't know your A from a hope. See, this is what I'm talking about. This is what I'm talking about. You want to come into my channel? Like, come on, man. Use profanity, delusions to profanity. You don't even know what a dog meant to teach you. Here he goes again. You, my friend, need some humility. You know, that's really like always the strangest thing, right? When someone says you need to be humble, you need to be humble. What are they really saying? Right? That's one of the most prideful things a person can say. That's the most, telling someone you need to be humble is a prideful thing to say. Because what you're saying, you need to put yourself beneath me. You need to lower yourself. It's very prideful to say someone should be humble. I just think I find it very strange. I'm dancing. It's called I Live in a Bubble Complex. Yeah. I think that's true. I mean, we should always do our best, I think, to listen to divergent voices at times, right? Because one, sometimes it does help us to reaffirm what we believe is true, right? You know how you hear a Protestant say something completely dumb, like about the Blessed Mother Mary? Like sometimes occasionally hearing a divergent voice, it's helpful. Right. But we should always avoid echo chambers. And we should never become just an echo chamber of talking to ourselves and referencing ourselves. Because when we do that, what does that mean? It means that we're not evangelizing others. But this is what one segment of our church do, you know, Rad Trad Inc. They don't want to convert Protestants. They don't want to convert Muslims or atheists or Mormons. Only thing they want to bring into their church is Novus Ordo Catholics. They remind me of Protestants who go to the Philippines. That's what they remind me of. Lisa Leopold asked some historical time context. Says in 1974, when Pope Pius VI issued the Apostolic Exhortation, Mariales Cultus, I think that's the cult of Mary, encouraging the recitation of the rosary, both privately and in groups as a preparation for liturgy, he did find it necessary to add, however, it is a mistake to recite the rosary during the celebration liturgy, though unfortunately this practice still persists here and there. So, yeah, I always thought that was probably like a common abuse of the liturgy itself, right? And why perhaps another reason why they thought reform could be good, right? There was little participation in the traditional Latin Mass. Fewer and fewer people understood the Latin. There was great ignorance about the mystery meaning in the history of the liturgy itself. Great ignorance at that time. No, a lot of people just didn't know what was going on. And a lot of times people turn to private devotions during the liturgy out of ignorance. For if they knew what was going on during the liturgy, they would never self-distract themselves or think there was something greater than what is going on. So the idea of participation was meant to get people away from these private devotions and this ignorance and get them to engage. Sort of like in a classroom where the teacher says, hey, raise your hand. You know, I don't think that's been a result so far. Right. Kevin says, yeah, that's true, David. You rarely seen Protestant converts that convert to traditional Mass. Only know a handful. Yeah, I think it's going to happen if your spouse, somebody like a Candace Owens, you know, her spouse is traditional Mass. I think it happens like that. But we're, you know, when we talk about, you know, your typical traditional Mass prayers, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of self-enclosed. You know, we look at liberals, we look at the left, right? Don't they do a wonderful job in their parishes with like feeding the hungry, having clothing drives? Like they completely miss that the Catholic Church is not an NGO, that it's not a, you know, that's not our primary purpose, right? To be a social service agency. But they do a wonderful job with food banks and all this stuff. Typical always have a St. Vincent de Paul attached to them, right? But then we look at the other side. We look at a lot of your traditional Mass parishes. They tend not to be engaged in those type of things. They tend not to have a prison ministry. They tend not to have that type of outreach. It's a lot of insular, let's look at us type of things. This is, you know, and I'm not casting a blanket statement. I think some do look outside, but it tends to be insular. And this is why you tend to find these people like Dr. Peter Kay and Kennedy Hall. They tend to promote this Gnosticism about the traditional Mass. Oh, you have to come here to be saved. It's Protestantism. You're not Protestant. Say, oh, you got to speak in tongues to be saved. Oh, you have to say the sinner's prayer to be saved. Right. Oh, you have to come to the traditional Latin Mass to fulfill your Sunday obligation. Oh, you have to come to traditional Latin Mass to be saved. It's like the same thing. It's very insular, right? Very Gnostic in this way. So, that's all I know about that for now. Let's get out of here. It's been 1 hour, 35 minutes, 95 minutes. So I'll catch you guys on the next time. Again, make sure you guys tune in to everything we're doing at St. Dominic's Media. Check out Kyle Kopey's podcast, Even Keel. It's a wonderful podcast. Give us some likes and some love. And on every other Wednesday, you know, we're doing the Last Word podcast. That's when myself, Kyle Kopey, and Bobby Hesley become on to talk about some things. So tomorrow's Wednesday, we'll be on talking about a lot of things that's going on the church now. And so I will see you all next time. Really appreciate all of you coming in, hanging out with me. I really appreciate it. Thank you for being my friends. And until then, and until next time, blessings and shalom to you and to yours. Good night and God bless.